Oh boy, I could listen to that all day. That was the great Sonny Stitt with Blues Greasy. Sonny Stitt was a remarkable musician, absolutely perfect on tenor and alto sax, and headed up several different groups and just was perfect. Perfect. I could listen to his music all day. He composed this tune, which we're hearing, called Blues Greasy in 19 and recorded it in 1957 for the album Personal Appearance. By the way, even back in those days, how difficult it was to produce an album. He produced more than 100 of them. And it's a big contest as to which was the best. They were all so perfect. Bobby Timmons on piano, Edgar Willis on double bass, and Kenny Dennis on drums. Sonny Stitt died at the age of 58 in 1982 in Washington, D.C. He had been diagnosed with cancer at that time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we've been asking and answering questions all week, and today is not going to be an exception. We'll, especially though, we are taking a look at what you think you might have to do to survive. These are very perilous times, very strange times, and you have to be flexible. You have to have a sense of optimism, even in the midst of all this pessimism and craziness. But most importantly, you always have to think about your survival. What would you need to do to survive? And certainly for those of you who have children or families that you're raising, this is a central question that haunts you every day. But we're all in the same boat, trying to figure out how best do we take it one day at a time and keep our eyes focused on this notion of surviving, not just, getting by, but doing well, still continuing with the struggle. This is our life as a people. We continue with struggle, but we add a little bit more effort and intelligence to it so that we survive. That's very, very important. So we will be going in that direction today. So let me ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind, and see whether you're willing to say or discuss or give some insight into what for you is a specific area that you are taking care of in answering or responding to this question of surviving. I have a whole list of things that people should consider doing or should look at as a plan of action that puts them just the same, even though you're under the gun. It would help to focus your attention and to bring you to the central issue of what do you do? What do you have to do to keep walking one foot in front of the other and being cheerful as you deal with the craziness outside of your window, and your door. But how do you also help your whole family? How do you inspire them to have courage and to have the guts to see this period we're going through as not eternal, but as a way of also tempering ourselves, steeling ourselves against adversity? What are we doing, or what do you think are some of the things that we should be thinking of doing in order to survive? 888-874-4888. Let's hear some of the things that are crossing your mind at the moment as an approach that you could take, or just adopt an attitude about and say, this is a smart way to go. This would help me in having the fortitude and the courage to continue. Many of us have families and children. I don't, but I feel like I do because I look around and there are people all around me. And I don't mind it one bit. I don't mind it one bit. I was raised in a very large family, and my two parents had to figure out a way to keep us going, and they did. Not making a lot of money at the beginning when my father and mother started their lives out as a married couple. Money was not in great supply, but they figured out a way. And they held on to each other. And thankfully, they held on in turn to us. They didn't let us go. They didn't let us go. But we find that that spirit is challenged more and more these days, where people just don't see how they could make it. They can't see how they could go from day to day feeling upbeat, feeling that they can cope, and feeling overwhelmed. And that is when you know you're in the danger zone, when you feel overwhelmed, so that you're not going to be useful to the people looking to you for strength and guidance and for special knowledge, special things that you know how to do. And they look to you for inspiration. So we have the experience, we've been through it, we still are going through it, of whether we want it or not, people look to us as leaders, they look to us as people who can find answers, who can help us understand which way we ought to go, who can craft an approach for survival out of a situation that looks so bleak. But they have that special energy, that special knowledge and creativity to help everybody understand that, yes, it's rough, but we are rougher than that. We can deal with it. We can deal with it. It would be perfect if we didn't have to, but you can't make those decisions in life. Life comes at you at 100 miles an hour, and you have to figure out how to brace for it and to win, how to prevail. 888-874-4888. If you wish, I could start us off with a suggestion, and I have many here, about things that we can start doing if we haven't already. And this is whether the situation passes over or whether it continues for a much longer time. These are things that we should think of doing because they are life-affirming. They help us endure. They help us survive. And indeed, that's where everything starts. If you are surviving, if you are able to help others survive, then you're doing good work. You're doing very good work. How about, for example, right away, you scale down your living? Oh, that's a big one for many Americans. Scale down, it's already down. What do you mean scale down? I mean bare bones. You bring everything down to the bare minimum so that it doesn't cost you every day to keep something going, which is purely an illusion. Other things should take precedence right now, and you will be paying attention to those things. But, you know, whether your couch needs to be recovered or you need a whole new couch and all of that, this is not the time to yield to those temptations because you have to conserve the few pennies that you've got. So you bring your living standards down to the minimum that does not require you to lay out money simply to keep the illusion going that you're living well. Is this something you could do? Is this something very hard for you to do? Do you think you will feel a loss if you're not able to do that and still remain viable and vibrant and engaged? Is it that these things you have make you who you are, and therefore you pay attention to the things that you have or still want to have, rather than you see what the challenge is before you and what your priorities should be? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I don't see you there. What's going on? 888-874-4888. This is going to last a long time, long after the big danger has passed, if you will. There will still be issues that we must deal with. We have to come to terms with. What is the most important thing in our lives? If you have a family, the most important thing is your survival, that everybody is surviving and doing well. Nobody's getting sick. Nobody is dying. You know, nobody's getting hurt. Nobody is deprived, seriously deprived of anything. But you're keeping it together and you're showing leadership. And so your whole family, even your neighbors and others, will take a tip from you because they will see how you're managing. You are showing leadership by taking charge of altering or making necessary changes in your life. Gwen from New York, what do you think of some of the things that you might be doing or will have to do in order to survive?
Well, I just want to say, first of all, you're singing my song, okay? Because this is what I do. This is exactly how my life is. I really like it, too. I think everything I have is gorgeous. Almost all of it is from the trash. There's nothing better than trash picking in New York, because there are so many treasures to find. I do not feel deprived. I do not go out and recklessly spend money. But I am going to get my chair covered, and I'm really excited because I think it's should be against the law to throw furniture in the garbage. It's so unconscionable that people throw furniture in the garbage. And that's what we do now in America. When you want to move, you don't move. You just let everything go in the garbage, and then you go on. Well, guess what? That stuff's not biodegradable. It's very hazardous. So I've had the same couch for 20 years, and it's so comfortable. I have a fantastic man in my neighborhood who charges me $200 to make a new slip cover for my couch, $150, $150 for my chair, and they're going to be gorgeous. I go to a great sewing store where everything's cheap. But I barely spend my money. If I have any money at all, I've never been rich. I've never even made $50,000, so I don't make a lot of money. But I have a really nice life. I don't sit around and bemoan what I don't have. I have plenty of possessions. If that's what's going to ring the bell, there are so many possessions out there that you can get without buying. As a matter of fact, I think that's one of the biggest problems in America is we are completely over. We have so much more than we could need. That so many people have their homes are stuck with possessions that they don't use. Then we put them in the trash where they can't biodegrade. And I completely agree with you to scale back, and you can still have a wonderful life, a comfortable life. And I think that as far as people are concerned, you know, getting your mind out of the mindset that you are what your possessions are, no, you're not. I mean, the fun thing about getting something that's out of the trash is that, you know, you got this great find out of the trash, and you didn't pay anything for it. I feel like I'm 20 times ahead of the game because when I get home and I start looking these things up, I just got a print out of the garbage of the day. It's worth $150, okay? Somebody threw $150 out, and I got it. But it's fun for me. It's like sport. But for me to actually go and plunk down, you know, $2,000 for a piece of furniture, I don't think so. But it's also really bad for the environment. So you are living better in this world if you're taking up much space. You're doing a better thing for the environment. And I do believe that, especially wooden furniture, it should all be recycled. You should continue to use it. Find ways of using it. And I don't think that you will feel bad about the way you're living if you don't put that burden on your head of saying, I'm only as good as my possessions. I mean, I have a car, a 1995 Toyota. I feel like I'm ahead of the game because that car doesn't have an electric system in it. So it will never break. It hardly ever breaks. And I will never have to pay $1 million to get it fixed because there's nothing of electricity in there that's complicated. But I just want to reiterate that, you know, if you put your mindset into that place of, you know, status, very, very dangerous. Forget about pride. The word pride and status, these are pretty bad things. They never led to anything good. The Bible talks about it, and it's just not really a great way of living. So, you know,
Do you think by living the way you're living, you're setting a good example for those around you to say?
Yes, my neighbors were walking by me and saw me with a beautiful table. And now, like, six people started driving along. What are you doing? Like, yeah, that is really nice. But one person like that, oh, gee. And then also starts getting a little jealous about it. So, you know, everybody is kind of getting that, you know, these things, these possessions that people keep putting out and saying they have nothing value, they do have value. I know they have value. Now, you can keep putting your stuff out in the trash and buying plastic furniture and all kinds of stuff that's really junk. Or you can get something beautiful and have something that is actually worth money, and you're not hurting the environment because you're not putting it into the garbage. And, you know, like on so many levels, you're doing the right thing, and you have something beautiful. I mean, you can have it all, but you must stop identifying yourself as your job. You're not your job. You go to your job to make some money so you can have food and have a place to live. But, you know, your job is, I mean, if you really are in love with your job, that's great. Then do your job. But for me, in my life, I don't love my job. It's okay. But, you know, I go to work primarily to make money, to have a nice life. I don't go and kill myself anymore because I realize I am not here to have a stroke so the man at the top can have $1 million in his bank account. Okay, you'll get plenty. I'll sell for you enough that I can live comfortably and you can too. And then I go home and I have a little bit of money and I have some nice things. But I don't need to go crazy.
No. Well, that's great. Thank you for kind of putting things in perspective for us, and also incorporating all these different aspects, because people would look at it one-dimensionally. You just went out and you picked something up off the street. But what they're not discussing, or they may not be thinking about, you're helping the environment, you're also recycling, you're being responsible, and you're conserving the few resources that you have, and you're making a good thing.
I've got money in the bank, okay? So I'm safe, because I on all aspects, this is a better way of looking at the planet, and it's in your mind. It's what you put out there.
Well, thank you for getting us started today, Gwen. Thank you.
Thank you.
In Bye-bye. Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how's it going?
Okay.
All right.
What do you think, what for you, as in this period that we're in, everybody's watching the few pennies that we have, what are you doing in a conscious way to communicate to those around you, your family and so forth, how they can contribute to the whole family, basically conserving for a rough time that we're in?
Well, I what I'm doing consciously amongst my family and also my friends is trying to establish a different paradigm from what the society garners as, you know, a successful or prosperous person. And what I'm trying to establish with my family and friends is the most important thing about, you know, your question about how we can survive as a unit is each other. And establishing something that, you know, the most important thing about our relationship is you and what, you know, what you mean to, you know, the unit of, like, let's just say the family. So, for instance, let's just take, for instance, I just had a recent death in my family. And the thing is that the family does not have to worry about, you know, how we're going to feed everybody for the repast. How are we going to pay for the expenses of the deceased person's immediate family? Because everybody else has taken care of that. And I think if we are all to survive and actually prosper in the society, we have to all do it together. And I think it does start with, you know, with, you know, family, because what I'm also finding out is there are many families out here who live in the same area, but they don't want to even deal with each other. And so I'm trying to bring, especially, you know, with my family, you know, together to make sure that, you know, we see each other, you know, every once in a while outside of just funerals, weddings, and the occasional, you know, family reunion, because it's important to establish relationships. Because, you know, for me, I've always taken the perspective that the most prosperous person is not the person with the most money or the most things. It's the one with the most, the one that has the most positive relationships that they can rely on. You ever had a situation where you go into a city and you don't have to worry about hotel expenses because the person that you know there, whether it be family or friend, says, hey, you can stay at my place. I got a room for you. I have that with certain people in certain cities and people who I know, family and friends, that come into Chicago, they know they can stay at my place. And it's not going to be a problem.
How are you and your family handling this period that we're in?
Well, I mean, we seem to be handling it okay in regards to, you know, as far as some of the monetary things of, you know, how we're dealing with, you know, like I said, you know, the death of a family member. I mean, I know emotionally we're still kind of, you know, sad about it, but at the same time, the only thing that we're dealing with right now is just the death. We're not worrying about how we're going to pay for this or how we're going to pay for that, because that's all been taken care of, whether it be, you know, from, you know, whether it be from the perspective of the cost of, you know, hosting this or hosting that, you know, because obviously with, you know, with deaths, you know, family and friends get together, you got to feed them. And that's not going to be a problem. So we take that worry out of that and just deal with, you know, the passing of, you know, our family member. And also, too, taking away the pressures and the worries from the elders of the family, you know, that, you know, we got to take, you know, we got to take care of this, we got to take care of that, because, you know, the one thing that one of my family members did is, you know, we rallied a lot of the younger folks, you know, to gather around and take care of certain things in this situation. So, yeah, I think the, you know, once we established the relationships with each other, you know, all of this, when these situations arise, we can all get together and immediately, you know, start forming, you know, plans and strategies on how we're going to take care of this. One of the things that I also had was implementing too is having a breakfast for our family members at least once a month to get together, because one of the things that one of my other relatives was saying is, you know, like I said, we only see each other at funerals and special occasions. We need to see each other at least some consistency. And because we see each other with these consistencies, we don't have a problem picking up the phone and calling each other and saying, hey, can you help me out with this? It's already done.
Mm-hmm. So is this something new or recent in the development of how your family is working? And did it grow out of the necessity to do it, or was it something that was there all the time?
Well, I will say this. So on my mother's side of the family, the monthly breakfasts were actually going on for years. And I've been trying to get together on my father's side for a bit, and I think we're having a bit of a success with it, because, you know, coming out of the pandemic now, you know, we're kind of able to, you know, get together as a group now, because obviously Chicago is supposed to be opening up fully now, and, you know, they're saying that, you know, we can have gatherings, but we've also had to put that on hold with my mother's side as well. But going from the results of what's happened, that's what's happened on my mother's side, we've had a lot of success in regards to handling these situations of, you know, deaths, you know, people, you know, going through tragic situations that were non-lethal, like fires and everything like that. And, you know, like I said, we didn't have to ask if they needed anything. They already had it, because we were all there, you know, ready and able to give them what they need. And so now I'm trying to implement this on my father's side, and hopefully when we get to these situations, you know, people are on the ready to just give what they can.
Have you realized yet that in the middle of all of this, you are emerging or have emerged as a leader in your family?
You know, I do kind of realize that, even though my father's still alive, my aunt, mm-hmm. who is my father's oldest sister, is still alive, and I still give deference to the elders of the family because they are the elders. But yeah, somebody had told me that, and it was like, oh my God, am I supposed to be a leader? Because, you know,
that's what, in fact, has happened or is happening. The circumstances produced a whole different level of leadership and commitment by you, and people are recognizing.
Yeah, and also, you know, as a leader, there's a burden of responsibilities that you have to have.
Yeah, you're the one with the deepest pockets. You're the one with the most time. Yes.
Oh yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah, I got the most money and I got the most time to just spend everywhere.
Yes, yes. But this is a very endearing story to hear, because it flies in the face of people who keep telling us how bad things are, but they don't see the opportunity to move in a way that consolidates rather than, you know, it fragments people. You're consolidating the power and the resources that you have, and that is a direct contribution to group survivability. So congratulations, you're doing a great job. Thank you. Thanks, Henry, for calling in. 888-874-4888. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace. How are you today?
Thank you.
Well,
I'm okay.
Good. Well, this is a very interesting conversation you raise, as usual. And I have to say, from sort of a left activist point of view, I mean, I considered myself a movement person, quote, quote, for my entire adult life. And, you know, which means over 20 years of activism, you know, as well as I contribute at different periods in my life. And it's very strange because I'm seeing all new divisions amongst ranks in activism as well as within families. And, you know, in my own family, for example, there's the problem of, or what I view as a problem, of people who are just kind of locked in to the CNN narrative, what I'm calling a CNN narrative, where they're just kind of taking in all this fear-based content and not questioning anything, and emotionally unsettled to go along with it, from my point of view, and very defensive about any idea outside of that framework. And same thing within activism. You know, people who I've known to be critical thinkers and people who have gone beyond superficial theory in regard to race, class, historical analysis, and so on, all of a sudden, again, they are in lockstep with the New York Times and CNN. And I can't differentiate between that, what I'll call a mainstream point of view, and, you know, the point of view of these people who I thought were politically astute and were critical thinkers. And, you know, it definitely is playing out in the whole vaccine discussion, which I find strange. Like, for example, if you criticize Anthony Fauci, people associate that strangely with right-wing propaganda at this point. They'll say, oh, that's right-wing propaganda. And then it makes me think, well, is Anthony Fauci left? Is the right wing attacking the left if they attack Anthony Fauci, or Bill Gates? Same thing. If you criticize Bill Gates, oh, that's Trumpian propaganda. Is Bill Gates left? And then likewise, you have people pressuring fellow citizens, fellow community members into getting a vaccine that's being provided by corporations that have all committed felonies. So I don't understand how that plays into left politics, in the sense of saying that people are obligated to make a pact with felonious corporations that are shielded from liability. So, you know, it's been a delicate balance. Back to the more personal side of the question, it's been a delicate balance because I feel the need to enlighten people as well as I can, based on what I've learned, or based on what's enlightened me. And, you know, like James Baldwin said, if I love you, I must make you aware of that which you cannot see. And I hope the same thing is being applied towards me. But at the same time, with people being emotionally on edge during this entire period, it's a delicate balance. You know, it's not something that, you can pursue at all times. Sometimes you just have to table certain discussions. And sometimes, you know, a great term that my aunt introduced me to is a term I already knew, but as it applies to life, one thing that you have to do, unfortunately, at times, is some people who you may love have to be put on the back burner, so to speak, meaning not everything has to be resolved in a confrontation all at once. But sometimes people can be just placed on the back burner for a period if things aren't going well in terms of communication. It doesn't mean you don't love them, but, you know, certain antagonisms just aren't worth pursuing. Most, actually, aren't worth pursuing.
Has any aspect of yourself that you didn't really know before, has any aspect revealed itself to you in this period of time that we're in? And what has been your reaction to this discovery of a new part of yourself?
Well, you know what? It's a very interesting question for me, particularly because I became a father for the second time. I have a 3-year-old son and I have a 9-month daughter. So, when this whole thing started, it was like I was about to be a father for the second time. My wife was about to give birth to our daughter. So it's like as a father of 2 young children in particular, you know, they're really my responsibility. They're my inspiration. They're, you know, the thing that makes me just feel very happy, actually, every day, and very content, along with the great responsibility that goes along with it. But, you know, the thing about that is it really makes a lot of other things just a lot less important to me, you know. And that's another thing that I'm noticing is people in their arguments, they're getting all huffy and puffy, whether it's online or in person, probably online at this point, but people are getting into a lot of arguments during this period, and there's been a lot of fractions in families and groups and friendships and whatnot. And, you know, it's like, look, if someone's not your wife or your husband, if someone's not your, you know, your son or your daughter, if someone's not your business partner that owns a 50-50 business with you, then just relax. You can have your opinion and I can have mine. I don't love you any less, you know, and I'm sad that if you love me less because my opinion doesn't conform to yours, but I'm going to have to go on with my life anyhow. And since I have 2 beautiful children to raise, I'm not too pressed about it, actually. So, you know, I actually, in a period of tension, I feel pretty relaxed because my responsibilities are clear. And anything that's outside of those essential responsibilities is, you know, it's okay, you know, for everyone to have an opinion and so on and so on. But it doesn't add or subtract to my life. I've learned more than ever not to overreact.
What great news. You're sharing great, great news. Self-awareness, self-growth, even in the midst of what people would say is, you know, an overwhelmingly negative situation, you see yourself just the same as a stabilizing force, and you are stabilizing because you've learned a thing or two in the middle of all of this craziness that's going on around you.
And you know what I'd like to share finally? I don't mean to interrupt, but one thing I'd like to add finally is just, you know, in my ongoing dialogue with my wife, because of course we're a couple and we continue to work on our marriage. You know, my wife would be the first to admit that she gets a little bit tense at times. She gets a little worked up about things and she knows I'm generally more relaxed than she is. But I feel like we've had a breakthrough recently because I've just pointed out to her that, look, we're okay. Like, stop for a second. We didn't get one of those terrible phone calls right now that you get in your life that something terrible just happened. Like, we have some challenges. We're working on everything as we go, but we're okay. And let's take it from there. Let's not start from a negative place. Let's not start from a deficit. Let's pause, say, okay, we're not going hungry. We do have a roof over our heads. Our children are healthy. It's a lot to be happy for right there. Check, check, check. We're okay. Let's take it from there. So that's what I say to everybody out there is if you're doing okay, take stock of it and take it from there.
Well, you have conducted class today. You most certainly have. You have shared incredible wisdom, and you also, you know, have done it with a sense of compassion. It's not that, you know, these are the things that you're not paying attention to. They're not important. It is about developing the discipline to differentiate between what should concern you and what should not concern you at this time. And that is making a decision about your priorities at this time. You talk about your family, your children, your wife as being the number one priorities in your life. And you don't have to sit in a corner wondering, well, what am I going to do? Your vision is clear, even in the midst of some craziness happening around you. This is splendid. This is incredible. A great lesson you taught us today. Thank you so much for that.
Please. Glad to contribute.
Thank you. Sandra from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
You're Therese?
Yes, I'm hearing you now.
Okay, yeah, this is Sandra from Brooklyn, New York. You trees, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm on the house phone, so I don't know if I moved away and it disconnected a bit. But anyway, I'm glad I'm back. It's so great to talk with you because I've been listening for a while, and I listened to BAI for many years, so... I'm familiar with you, so it's just so nice to get you.
Thank you.
I wanted to share, you trees, today is that during this, all this information about the pandemic and family and friends dying, and I'm trying to convince people about the injection and everything in my family, my daughter is married, and I have two grandchildren, and one is 17 and one is 24. And sisters and brothers live all over the states, including England. And I realized that instead of getting occupied and very upset about all these vaccines and things, I realize that it's falling on deaf ears, like when I speak to them and they make their decision to be vaccinated. So what happened, when my daughter said to me, Mom, what am I supposed to do? Who is going back to school and going to college, and I have to travel, and I want to do this and do that. And then I something clicked that even though I'm anxious about things, when she said, well, what are we supposed to do? Because then this is what said and this is what required. Then I start, like, putting my energy, instead of being so nervous on what's going to happen down the line with them, with everything that I'm hearing and I'm nervous about it. And I said, well, since I'm preaching to the choir that's, you know, not listening or made up their mind already, I immerse myself into helping. Like, I have friends in St. Vincent and the Grenadines that had the volcano. It's not like because it left news, things are not happening. Things are still happening. And then also in Jamaica, you have some children that going back to school, backpack, certain things that they need. And I realized, why am I wasting my time and energy as to the things that I personally don't have control over? And I just immersed myself using a WhatsApp and reaching out to friends, because I always go to St. Vincent, so I really like that island. And I reached out to them and, like, what are your needs? And even though I'm on Social Security, you know, my family is secured and, you know, they're in medical or whatever, I said, you know what? Let me see what they need. And then so I got a list of all the things that they want, issues, what they need, who lose house. So I started just shopping for everything that they sent on the WhatsApp. And I realized that once I immersed myself into the things that, like, I can't change, in reference to family. Family is other people, good friends that are more in need, too, than the ones that are, like, fixed and, you know, made their decision for whatever reason. So I realized that once I start immersing myself into those things, I find better things are happening for me. Like, I really realize that I have to focus on the things them that I can change and leave the ones that I can't change. Hold on a second, the doorbell's ringing. Yeah, it's just so cool.
Life goes on.
Hold on a second. I'm sorry. I'm on...
Don't worry about it.
I expect someone, and it just happens to come at this time. But this is what I'm saying, that I realize that I'm sending off the package tomorrow. Thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate it. I have text you, so read the text. Yeah, I'm sorry, Utrecht. This is just all business.
No. I'm enjoying this. This is real life unfolding.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm like, the minute I'm calling, doorbell's ringing. Anyway, so then that's what I found, that, you know, why am I wasting energy as to the things that I can change, but the things that I can make a difference? And it is, now I'm not worried about who took vaccines, what, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm more focused on the people that, like, wait a minute, volcano, ash, I lose this, I need that. I said, I can be shopping, which is what I've been doing. I'm just shopping for everybody needs. Tomorrow, you know, 3-4 boxes are going. I'm putting it on a Merry Jet. And I find it's much better to focus on the things that you are making a difference and can change, more than worrying about the things that, you know, like I said, my family, I realize they're either stubborn, stuck in their ways or whatever, and they made their decision. I'm saying, why am I trying to change these people? I might as well put my energy into things that I can make a difference and help, and that people are appreciating that. So that's what I'm doing. And I find that all this anxiety about all these things that are going off are really off my head, because I'm more focused in onto the mission on hand, that people really need things. And I feel much better about it. I'm less stressed. So I wanted to share that.
You know what is wonderful about what you're saying?
Yes.
Is that you came into this realization yourself. Nobody had to tell you anything.
Yes.
It was a self-realization. You understood at a certain point, something gelled in your head that says, I want to do things that are important. I want to make a difference in people's lives.
Yes.
I want to help. And
yes,
I can't help anybody if I'm constantly fighting with this one or trying to persuade that one. You know, I see a clear vision.
Yes, that's what happened.
I can help, and that is going to bring me great peace and contentment. And that's what you're doing.
Correct. Because now I'm not having this anxiety, oh, what's going to happen to my granddaughters, because they are at the age and the injection, and I can't convince anybody. I said, you know what? And you know, Utrecht, all those things left my brain, all the anxiety about the things I can't change. Once my daughter had said, well, Mom, what are we supposed to do? I want to fly. You know, they have to go to school, college. What am I supposed to do? You either live in the society or you don't. And then it just, like, click, like, you know what, she's right. What are they supposed to do? They don't make these rules and laws, so, you know. So I said, and I feel so much better, you Utrecht. It's not like I have all this money, my little Social Security, but you know what? You use your food stamp, and I said, I'm getting people food. I don't need all this food. I'm using the food stamp. I'm buying the foods. I'm packing the things. These people going through ashes, this, that. I'm like, my problem is not a problem. That's what I realized. My problem is not a problem. People are real problems. So that that's what I'm doing. So I feel much better.
Do you get a sense that people are observing how you are basically using yourself to help others? Do you get a sense that this has come to the attention of other people?
Yes, I think the people that I know, because they're appreciating, and people even on my building, the elevator been out for about 3 months now, they're redoing the elevator, and they're like, Sandra, you're bringing up packages. I mean, I'm a little person, I'm older, but I'm little, I'm flighty. So I climb the stairs and I pick up packages, and who is in wheelchair, I deliver their packages. I just find that these things help me a lot, and it's not that I'm looking for appreciation, but the people thank me, like, oh my God, this is so heavy, thank you for doing this and doing that, you know? And I just realized that, like you said, why am I bothering with the things that I can't change when there are so many things to do that I can't change and make a difference in people's lives, no matter how small? Walking across the roof, bringing packages down to people with the shopping cart, and I'm like, but these people are not able. Why shouldn't I do that? You know, things like that. So I find that I'm just doing things in my life that people that appreciate what you do, that things falling on deaf ears, or you can't change other people. Well, you know what? Let me change myself.
Well, that's a perfect explanation. Perfect.
Yes.
Do you find yourself feeling more fulfilled now as a person than you did before when you were, you know, doing what was predictable?
Yes, because I was losing sleep. I was like, my heart was palpitating. These things are not happening to me anymore. The anxiety of, ooh, what's going on, this, that, I can't figure out what's real, those things are palpitating my heart and I can't sleep nights. Now this is much better. I don't have to focus on, you know, all these issues that I don't have a control over, you know. I just live in my life that the things that I can make control my action. It's actually, my pressure is not up. I don't have high blood pressure, but when doctors said I had high blood pressure, are you anxious these days? I said, excuse me, of course. COVID, this, that, of course, I'm anxious. So now that I'm concentrating on other people and not being so weary of all these things, my blood pressure is normal again.
Well, I am delighted to hear from you today and to hear your contribution, your story.
Yes,
because there's so many parts of it that are relevant to all of us. And, you know, you talk about putting yourself to good use. And it's not all about you. You are giving to people you may not even know.
Exactly.
But you know you're doing good work.
And that
brings back to you a sense of calm, a sense of you're doing God's work. It will not go unseen, that's for sure. It's not going to go unseen. So I thank you for kind of lifting my spirits today with your story.
Thank you so much.
It's
so nice to talk to you. And keep being very well. And I live with someone from Trinidad and Tobago, so I've always liked you anyway. Okay, sweetheart, you take good care.
All right, Sandra, nice to meet you today and to hear what you're doing. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This brings us to the end of our program today. And it wasn't planned to go this way. I had no plans, no expectations, but it was perfect. Because what we got from each person who called and contributed was an insight into how we function as full human beings, how we are supposed to function. Everybody told a story that had nothing to do with them. It was not about their interests. It was about being part of a communal solution and helping, genuinely helping. They didn't have to go to college and take a course in how to help others. They simply followed the natural impetus to fulfill what you know you have to do on the inside. That's fantastic. I am so elevated about this today. I thank you all for sharing your stories. I think I'll throw away my list. I had a long list of things to consider. They're no longer worth considering. But thank you so much for bringing them to our attention. Stay tuned. Coming up next is, if you want to keep it right here, for Ralph Nader and the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Great stuff coming up right after this.